I was at this holiday party several years back, one of those work parties where the atmosphere feels kind of heavy, like it's 40% oxygen and 60% expensive gin, and there's this specific high frequency brand of desperation hanging in the air. And it was the kind of space or atmosphere that just rattles your skull. So there was this upbeat, royalty-free corporate jazz that felt like being poked in the eye with a neon highlighter. But it was also the sheer exhausting effort of everyone in the room trying very hard to be perceived in order to occupy a square foot of relevance before the night ended. So at some point, I found myself standing near a tray of lukewarm spanakopita, staring at a mahogany bookshelf, I guess, and feeling rather exhausted under the circumstances. And I felt like my soul was being sanded down by a belt sander. Now, you may have guessed that I'm an introvert who sometimes, in certain situations, finds himself thinking things like, if I have to process one more unnecessary syllable, I might actually evaporate. If you know, you know. And I think for people like us, social interaction, it's like a tax. It's not a bridge. And I was basically staring at a tax that I couldn't pay. So naturally, I ended up spending 20 minutes or so in the host's bathroom, and I wasn't using the facilities. I was just sitting at the edge of the clawfoot tub, staring at a beige bath mat, and just listening to the muffled roar of the networking through the drywall, which to me sounded something like a stadium full of people trying to explain their LinkedIn bios all at the same time. Kind of a nightmare. And as I was sitting in that tiny tiled room, I felt this strange, defiant peace. And it felt like the most honest moment the entire night. I suspect that many of you would agree that we live in this culture that treats silence like it's a technical difficulty or something. Like it's a dead pixel on the screen of existence. I mean, if there's so much as a 3-second gap in conversation, we panic. And we try to fill it with a comment about the weather or some half-baked political hot take that we read while we were on a different bathroom break earlier in the day. So, for example, if there's a quiet moment in the car, we typically immediately unplug we plug in the a podcast or something, because the thought of being alone with your brain for 3 miles is apparently a fate worse than death. So it's like this relentless manufactured clamor, like an all-you-can-eat buffet of stimulation that no one actually wants, but everyone feels obligated to consume because it's just always there. And I've started to realize that staying sane in this environment, it's not so much, it's not really about self-care or buying a pair of noise-canceling headphones so you can listen to lo-fi beats to study to. It's more a rebellion. I would say a flat out refusal to participate in this collective hallucination that more noise somehow equals more life. You know, we're raised in a society where the extrovert ideal is seen as the pinnacle of human evolution. Susan Cain wrote about this in her very good book called Quiet. And I think it's worth thinking about because we worship the man of action. You know, this is the person who can command a room just by sheer volume. And we've built our offices, our schools, our social hierarchies to reward the people who don't think before they speak. I mean, these are the people who just react rather than respond. So collaboration has become like a buzzword that basically just means everyone talk at once in an open plan office until no one can remember what the original goal even was. But, you know, when you look at the actual state of things, the skyrocketing anxiety, the burnout, et cetera, not to mention the way that we're all vibrating with this low-grade, constant electrical stress, you have to wonder if the so-called winners are just the ones who haven't realized that they're drowning yet. And, you know, maybe the reason that we hate the silence so much is that it's the only time where we can actually hear the cracks in the foundation. And that is scary. So when the music stops and the notifications quit pinging, what you're left with is yourself. And for a lot of people, that is a terrifying person to be stuck in a room with, alone. But it was, I think it was Blaise Pascal who said that all of humanity's problems stem from man's inability to sit quietly in a room alone. Now, unfortunately, we've become addicted to the distraction because the alternative, you know, actually perceiving the reality of our lives is unbearable. So this isn't just about hating loud parties, though I do. This is about how the modern world has basically weaponized stimulation to the point where quiet actually feels like a threat to the system. So ultimately, it's about the way that we've traded our depth for a wider but definitely shallower pool of just digital noise. So in this monologue, I wanted to pull back the curtain on that noise somewhat. And you know, not just the stuff that you hear with your ears, but the chaos and that lives in your pocket and in on your screen. So we're gonna look at the physical cost that's literally rotting our hearts and our sleep. But I think even more importantly, I want to just talk about the digital, mainly the digital static that's just destroying our capacity to feel anything actually real. And I want to discuss why pulling the plug is really the only way to actually hear yourself think before the signal just goes dead for good. Game over. So if you've ever spent some time in the woods or the desert or wherever, maybe you have noticed that there's this particular, I guess, special kind of silence in these places, especially if you experience it at 2 a.m. And it isn't, the thing is, it isn't actually silent, though, because, well, maybe there's a breeze you can hear moving through the scrub brush or the sound of your own blood pumping in your ears. So this sound is, it's a clean, it's an unpolluted sound. It's a sound that doesn't want anything from you. Now contrast that with the sound of a modern city or even a quiet suburban office. We've become so used to the background hum of existence that we don't even notice that we're living inside a giant vibrating tuning fork. Or maybe that's not the best example, because tuning forks are actually kind of nice. In any case, the problem is that our bodies notice, and evolution didn't prepare us for things like the leaf blower or that distant, never-ending drone of the interstate or airplanes, sirens, and so on. So, to our prehistoric brain, a loud, persistent noise usually meant something was about to eat us. Or the sky was falling. When you live in a world that never shuts up, your nervous system stays in this state of, it's like a low-grade twitchy panic. And there's actual hard data on this that's pretty grim. So researchers have found that chronic noise, you know, this exposure to chronic noise is a direct line to cardiovascular disease. Yeah. And it's not just that the noise is annoying. It's that it actually triggers a physical stress response that spikes your cortisol and then sends your blood pressure into the stratosphere. So in a sense, we're literally vibrating ourselves into early graves. And, you know, there's good vibration and there's bad vibration. And I think this is just a matter of finding a much healthier balance, because as it stands these days, things are just way out of whack. There's a study out of Germany that linked aircraft noise to a significant increase in heart failure and strokes. And we're not just talking about people that live next to the runway. We're talking about the cumulative static of modern life in general. And it gets even weirder when you look at what it does to the brain. So, cognitive impairment. it's not just something that happens to people in these high stress jobs. It happens to anyone who can't find a quiet corner to think, or not think for that matter. So they discovered that in children, chronic noise has been shown to delay reading development and basically ruin long-term memory, which means that we're raising entire generations in this environment that's making it physically difficult to learn how to be a person. But here's the thing. I'm less interested in the decibels, and I'm more interested in the chaos, because there's a different kind of noise that doesn't show up on a sound meter. And that's the noise of the grind. The noise of the expectation that you should always be reachable and productive and on 24/7. Now this is the sound of conceptual noise. It's the static imagine 1,000 tiny obligations that are always screaming for your attention. And I think we've reached this point where we've forgotten what it feels like to just have a quiet mind. I mean, even when we're sitting in a silent room, our brains are usually performing some frantic internal monologue of, you know, to-do lists or perceived slights or what have you. So we've internalized the chaos of the world to the degree that we've become our own, like our own personal leaf blowers. And I despise leaf blowers, by the way. Probably one of the dumbest inventions ever. But, you know, we're addicted to this friction. And maybe you've caught yourself doing something like this. So you'll be in a perfectly peaceful place. Maybe it's a park or a quiet library. And within 3 minutes, you feel this itchy, uncomfortable sensation in the back of your skull. Now, this is the withdrawal symptom of the modern age. So this is your brain looking for the noise. It's looking for the outrage, the notification, the ping or whatever, that's telling you that you're still connected to this hive mind. So it's basically, it's I kind of see this as a form of Stockholm syndrome, where we're falling in love with the thing that's killing our focus, our concentration. I mean, it's really killing our consciousness on a certain level. And systemically, we've built this very loud world that views silence as something like a lost opportunity for more profit. Because if you're sitting quietly, well, then you're probably not consuming, right? You're not clicking, or you're not generating data for a machine that wants to sell you a mattress or a political ideology. So the world just keeps getting louder and louder, and not because it has anything important to say, but because the noise is just the mechanism of the machine. And the louder it is, well, then the harder it is for you to realize how much of your life is being harvested by all this distraction, this controlled chaos. So we're in this constant state of defiant sanity just by trying to lower the volume. But it's hard to turn down the sound when, I mean, the speakers are practically built into the walls of your own head. The thing is, we've been conditioned to believe that if we step out of this noise, then we will be forgotten. If we don't contribute to this endless roar, then we don't exist. But I think the irony here is that the more that we scream into the void, the less anyone actually hears. We're all just adding to all this distortion until the signal is nothing but like this, you know, massive screaming feedback loop. So if you have ever worked in a modern office, you've likely seen the physical manifestation of a psychological war zone. Now I'm talking about the open plan layout, which was sold to us as this egalitarian paradise of a spontaneous collaboration or something. But in reality, that layout is just, that's just a way to pack as many bodies into a square meter as possible, ensuring that no one has a moment of privacy to actually think. So it's like this giant fluorescent petri dish designed for people who thrive on being seen and heard, while the rest of us are just left trying to build a fortress out of noise-canceling headphones and sheer willpower. And this isn't an accident. I mean, this is the logical conclusion of what Susan Cain calls the extrovert ideal. Somewhere along the way, Western culture decided that the man of action was superior to the man of contemplation. And we've equated talkative with smart and gregarious with leader. And if you're the person in the meeting who wants to sit quietly and process the information before opening your mouth, well, then you get labeled as not a team player, or my personal favorite, lacking presence. So this is a systemic bias that it runs so deep that we don't even question it anymore. Our schools and our hiring processes are designed for this. I mean, desks get moved into pods where kids are forced into constant group work, regardless of whether that's how they actually learn. And, job interviews, if you can get one, they get measured by... It seems like they get measured by how well you can perform a personality rather than how well you can actually do the job. So what's happened is personality has been turned into a commodity, and those of us who find that commodity exhausting are treated like we're defective or something. And I think the joke here is that we think this obsession with the loud leader is actually making us somehow better or superior. But the truth is that there's zero correlation between being a fast, loud talker and having a good idea. In fact, research actually shows the exact opposite. But because we've built a society that values the performance of competence rather than actual competence, we end up with this world that's led by the most confident idiots in the room, which we see all the time now. And we're in this feedback loop where the loudest voices they're the ones getting the most resources, which allows them to get even louder, while the quiet, analytical, and thoughtful work happens in the cracks, usually by the people who are one mandatory fun happy hour away from a total nervous breakdown. I have spent a lot of my life feeling like I was doing it wrong. Like there's some secret manual for people who are well adjusted to society that I just never received for whatever reason. So I'd go to these social events and watch people navigate them with this effortless, high energy grace. And I'd feel like a clockwork toy whose spring was slowly winding down. And I used to think that this was a character flaw, like a lack of toughness or something. But the more that I look at the systems that we live in, the more I realize that my introversion, it's not a bug. It's a protest, and it's a natural reaction to a world that has become insanely, unnaturally loud. Being quiet in a society that never stops screaming is a form of cognitive boundary setting. It's basically saying, listen, I refuse to let the collective volume dictate the frequency of my internal life. But unfortunately, we've stigmatized the need for solitude, and we've labeled it as antisocial or lonely. When in reality, solitude is the only place where the ego can't find an audience to perform for. You know, when you're alone, you don't have to be anyone. You don't have to manage your facial expressions or to make sure that you look engaged. You don't have to calibrate your tone to avoid offending the delicate sensibilities of a manager who hasn't read a book since the late 90s. So the systemic critique here is that by marginalizing the quiet, we've lost our ability to solve complex problems. And we wonder why the world is so screwed up. You know, complex problems require deep, focused, uninterrupted thought. The kind of thought that doesn't happen in a brainstorming session where the person with the most charisma wins. So what's happened is depth is getting traded for reach, and we're trading wisdom for engagement. And you can see these results everywhere nowadays. I mean, this is a culture that's incredibly loud, obnoxious, incredibly fast, and almost entirely devoid of depth or substance. The quiet rebellion it's not just about a bunch of introverts standing up for themselves. It's about everyone. Whether you're an introvert, an extrovert, or something in between, recognizing that the ideal that we've been sold is a lie. It's like a meat grinder that's designed to turn human complexity into a digestible, marketable performance. And choosing to be quiet and to just step back and disengage from the noise of this so-called ideal is really the only way to reclaim your own mind. You don't owe the world a performance. And you certainly don't owe it your sanity just to make loud people feel more comfortable. So, all right, so we've talked about the physical noise and the social noise, but there is a third layer that's arguably more insidious because we carry this one in our pockets like a glass and silicone cigarette. I'm talking about the digital static. So apparently, we've reached this point in human history where boredom has effectively been eradicated. And I believe that's actually one of the greatest tragedies of the 21st century. And here's why. Because boredom used to be the threshold to the imagination. Boredom is that uncomfortable, itchy space where your brain, starved of external input, it has to start making its own fun. So this is the place where songs are written, where philosophical breakthroughs happen, where maybe you realize that you didn't actually like your job. But, you know, these days, we don't ever have to be bored because, well, now we have this bottomless pit of content to fill every single microsecond of dead air. If you're waiting for the microwave to finish, you check your feed. If you're stopped at a red light, you glance at a notification. So we've become like these lab rats pressing a lever for a hit of dopamine, except the lever is this piece of polished aluminum, and the reward, I don't know, it's usually something like a video of someone you don't know having an argument about a movie you haven't even seen. And all of this noise it's controlled chaos. It's relentless, fragmented data stream chaos that it's keeping us in this state of continuous, partial attention. Now, the problem is that our brains weren't designed to switch context every 6 seconds. Every time you switch from an email to a text message to a headline about some disaster or whatever, you pay like a switching cost fee. So your cognitive resources just become depleted with this process. But you're not actually multitasking. You're just vibrating between different states of superficiality. And so by the end of the day, your brain feels something like a browser with 50 tabs open and 40 of them are frozen. So I think this is where the minimalist concept becomes more than just a decor choice. There's this stigma attached to minimalism as like owning one chair and a very expensive lamp or something. But minimalism is also digital, obviously, because it's the realization that information is no longer a scarce resource. It's becoming like a pollutant. And we're drowning in all this noise of the unnecessary, where we know everything about everyone now, and yet we understand less about our own lives than we ever have. So back when I was when I started doing these digital fasts, even for just a day, the first few hours were pretty agonizing. So there's this physical withdrawal where I felt this like a phantom limb syndrome for my phone. But then eventually something weird happens where reality starts to take on like a higher resolution. And I developed this heightened sense of awareness where I would notice little things like the way light hits a wall. And this kind of thing led me to getting into photography very heavily for a while. Just having seen things more clearly. So I started to have thoughts that weren't just reactions to something that somebody else said. And then the static cleared. And for the first time in I don't know how long, I noticed that the signal actually came through. I think technology is deleting the gap aspect of our lives. And by gap, I mean, this is the space between stimulus and response. That's the space where reflection happens. And without that gap, we're just, all we're doing is reacting. It's like we're just nodes in a network processing data and passing it along without ever letting it settle. We've become very efficient at the cost of being these effective humans. And let's be honest about what this technology is doing to our collective psyche. It's just feeding us this constant diet of outrage and comparison. And the noise isn't, it's not just data, it's emotional friction, which is exhausting. I mean, we're all exhausted by this. You know, we are effectively being trained to be on at this frequency of high alert anxiety all the time. And we're being sold this very manipulative idea that if we aren't informed all the time, which is really just another way of saying plugged into the outrage machine, that we're failing as citizens. But my question is, how the hell are you supposed to be a good citizen or a good partner or just a good human for that matter, if your internal hardware is constantly overheating from the sheer volume of all of this useless information? I think the quiet rebellion here is the act of unplugging without feeling this need to announce it to everyone. You don't need to be a part of the discourse or be a node in the hive mind or whatever. I think true clarity only comes with the realization that most of the noise in your life is actually optional. It's not mandatory. That's just the marketing talking. And the second that you stop listening to the scream of the digital world, you realize just how little most of it actually has to say. So we're basically stuck in this culture that's just vibrating itself to death. And our biology is screaming for a break from all of this. You know, it's easy to just shrug and say, well, that's just how it is now. But that, I think that's just surrendering. I think if you want to stay sane, you have to become a traitor to the extrovert ideal and something of a saboteur of the attention economy. And no, I'm not talking about selling everything and moving into a yurt in the desert, though personally, I wouldn't mind doing that at all. I'm talking about a more subtle and maybe a little more dangerous kind of minimalism. I'm talking about the defiant no. So the first potential solution, and look, I promise this isn't some insufferable platitude, is to intentionally lower your resolution in the eyes of the world. And what I mean by this is we're obsessed with being reachable. In truth, we're all addicted to this. And we feel this, you know, this phantom guilt if we don't answer a text in 2 minutes. I would try to focus on eliminating that guilt. And I'd do it by turning off every single notification on your phone that isn't from a human being you actually love. Now, most of the noise is really, it just comes from the machine that's it's trying to get your attention so it can sell your data to a third party. But when you turn off the pings, what you're doing is you're essentially telling the world that your attention, it's like a high-priced commodity, and you're no longer handing it out for free to every single app developer. I think we also need to reclaim the gap and just try to find at least, I don't know, 30 minutes a day where you are doing absolutely nothing productive. Where you're not feeding the machine somehow. You know, just let yourself sit there with the withdrawal symptoms and let your brain scream, you know, kick and scream for its digital pacifier. And if you can actually sit through that discomfort without reaching for a screen, I think you've won a major battle in the war for your own consciousness. And that is what this is. This is a war for our consciousness. I try to practice like a form of curated ignorance. So we've been conned into thinking that empathy requires a real-time feed of every tragedy on Earth. But it doesn't. That just makes you a neurotic wreck who's too paralyzed by all this global static to be useful to anyone in your own zip code. I don't think curated ignorance means apathy. I see it as resource management. You are allowed to not know things. It's okay. So I would try to stop apologizing for opting out and feeling bad about it. I think we suffer because we're afraid that the world is going to end if we stop participating in this game. And maybe it will end. But maybe it has to be so that a better world can be built where we don't have to deal with all this kind of insanity. Look, we are just navigating this ridiculous and beautifully absurd human condition, basically trapped in the Pleistocene meat suits while being pulled into techno-feudalist tactics. Nonetheless, I believe that silence and refusal is the baseline and probably the best thing that we can do is to recapture and reprioritize our attention and our mind, our consciousness, because without that, there's not much else we can accomplish. Not anything substantial, anyway. All right. That's all I've got on that topic today. As always, thanks for listening.